Well, the American people have a choice to make. It's clear. There's a president in office who's trying to truly make progress. And, you know, there's a convicted felon running against him who's trying to make bail.
Oh, snap. J.B. Pritzker. Making trouble. I like it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
Scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains, KKRN. Oregon, up on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. First up, even though presidential primaries have completed for the 2024 campaign season, congressional and other primaries will continue throughout summer, with Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina holding congressional primaries on Tuesday. North Dakota is also holding its gubernatorial primary on Tuesday as well. So please take the opportunity to get out and vote if you haven't already, if you're in one of those four states this week. Beyond that, finally, we are back live today at the KPFK studio in Los Angeles after being forced out of the building last week. Not KPFK, but just Desi and I forced out because of her recent bout with COVID again.
Yes, it's true.
Now, all hopefully behind us, which means we can and will finally open up the phones for the first time since Donald Trump's 34 felony convictions for his rigging of the 2016 presidential election by paying hush money to a porn star and subsequently falsifying documents 34 times to hide that payoff that helped him win the presidency back in 2016. I would love to... Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I'd love to hear from listeners today on that matter and how the conviction has or has not affected your plans to vote for or against Donald Trump this November. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. If you'd like to line up right now to share your thoughts in a bit, if you're in our live Southern California listening area or listening via the live kpfk.org web stream. We are also on our summer fun drive here at the station, our flagship station in L.A. So when you call in to 818-985-KPFK, if you'd like to get on the air to join us, please hit button number one or hit button number two to make a donation to help both KPFK and the Bradcast remain on your public airwaves, both here in L.A. and beyond. And yes, Desi, I think your mic was on there, so... Just watch what you... Now I can't hear you. Now it's off. Now you're good. Okay. Just watch that potty mouth of yours. Anyway, let's see. Regarding those 34 felony convictions, on Monday, the disgraced former president turned convicted felon Donald Trump was expected to attend a pre-sentencing interview on Monday ahead of his July 11 sentencing in his New York criminal case. A New York probation officer is expected to conduct the interview. Trump will attend remotely from his Mar-a-Lago residence in Palm Beach, Florida, to prepare a sentencing report recommending the appropriate punishment for New York Superior Court Justice Juan Merchan to impose at the former president's sentencing next month. Although defendants typically attend their interview with probation officials without the presence of counsel, Judge Merchan has signed an order to permit Trump's defense lawyer to attend the interview. So, yes, Trump's complaints about a two-tier justice system, well, they are true. There are two tiers, and Donald Trump is enjoying the top tier by being allowed, among other things, both to do the interview remotely instead of in person, as everyone else does, and he's being allowed to have his defense lawyer in the meeting. No, nobody else gets to enjoy such privileges other than Donald Trump. So, yes, it is a two-tiered justice system. The interview will not be public. The report is prepared ahead of Trump's sentencing. It's meant to advise Judge Merchan. It will likely remain under seal. In the New York state courts, a probation officer, a social worker, or a psychologist, I think they may need all three for Donald Trump, usually interviews a defendant convicted of a crime to better access their personal and criminal history before preparing a pre-sentence report for the judge overseeing the case. So we will see what happens here, but that is underway on Monday as we go to air. The interview could work against Trump if he demonstrates contempt toward the probation officer or lack of remorse for his claims. The judge is already quite familiar with the alleged conduct, having overseen the trial, and Trump's overall character after presiding over the case, and Trump frequently targeting both the judge and the judge's daughter throughout the trial. He was held in criminal contempt 10 times for violating the case's limited gag order, including several times after the judge had helped him, in contempt and warned that there could be jail time for further violations. And in fact, there have been further violations of that gag order since Trump's conviction. The report prepared by the probation officer, in addition to the sentencing submissions prepared by both sides, will be used by the judge to consider what type of sentence to impose on July 11. Each of the 34 felony convictions that Trump has now been found guilty of, they each carry a maximum four-year sentence, though Merchan could opt to impose no prison time. He could impose probation, a conditional discharge, including conditions like community services or fines. So we shall see. That is, but it is one question I would love to hear from listeners today. Will Donald Trump get jail time for these crimes? Should he get jail time for these crimes? And if not, why not? And are you okay voting for a 34-time convicted felon for president, whether he gets jail time or not? 818-985-5735, hit option number one. Now, we've got some breaking news within just the past hour here of airtime concerning Israel and Hamas. I will get to that in a moment. Before we get there, and to your calls on Donald Trump, some news of note here over the weekend, another busy news weekend. Benny Gantz, the centrist member of Israel's three-man war cabinet, announced his resignation on Sunday, accusing far-right Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of mismanaging the war effort in Gaza and putting his own, quote, political survival over the country's security needs. As we have been telling you for months on this program, that need for political survival is likely to keep Netanyahu waging this war, frankly, forever. given that he would most likely be removed as prime minister as soon as the war ends, when he would then be facing both criminal felony indictments at home, charges that were already brought against him before he took office, and potential charges on war crimes from the International Criminal Court upon leaving office. Benny Gantz, who is described as centrist here, but that's really a generous description. He's also on the right. He once headed up the Israeli Defense Force. But he's less far right than Netanyahu and the rest of the governing coalition. He seemed to be making a similar point about Netanyahu's predicament that I've been trying to make now for months, and the need to keep the war going forever by Netanyahu, with his announcement that he was resigning on Sunday. Ironically, however, while the move does not immediately pose a threat to Netanyahu, who still controls a majority coalition in parliament, the Israeli leader becomes more heavily reliant now on far-right allies who oppose the latest U.S.-backed ceasefire proposal, and they want to press ahead with the war. It is news on that U.S.-backed ceasefire proposal that is just breaking. I'll get to in a moment. Unfortunately, quote, unfortunately, Netanyahu is preventing us from achieving true victory, Gantz said, which is the justification for the painful and ongoing price. He added that Netanyahu was, quote, making empty promises, and the country needs to take a different direction as he expects the fighting to continue for years to come. Years. The popular former military chief joined Netanyahu's government shortly after the Hamas attack last October in a show of unity. Gantz said had previously said that he would leave the government by June 8 if Netanyahu did not formulate a new plan for post-war Gaza. He has been true to his word there. On Saturday night, four Israeli hostages, meanwhile, were dramatically rescued from Gaza in Israel's largest such operation since the eight-month war began. But at least 274 Palestinians, including children, were killed in that assault, according to Gaza health officials. Hamas took some 250 hostages during the October 7 attack that killed about 1,200 people. About half of them were released in a week-long ceasefire back in November. About 120 hostages remain, with 43 pronounced dead. At least 36,700 Palestinians have been killed in the fighting since then, according to Gaza's Hamas-run health ministry, which doesn't distinguish between fighters and civilians. A majority of those killed in Gaza, however, are believed to be women and children. And as to that breaking news on that peace process, just within the past hour, the UN Security Council on Monday backed a proposal outlined by President Joe Biden for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip and urged the Palestinian militants to accept the deal aimed at ending the eight-month-long war. Hamas said in a statement that it is ready to cooperate with mediators over implementing the principles of this plan. Now, Russia abstained from the UN vote. They could have vetoed this plan. The remaining 14 Security Council members, however, all voted in favor of the resolution supporting a three-phase ceasefire plan laid out by President Biden on May 31 that he described as an Israeli initiative. Quote, today we voted for peace, said U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The resolution welcomes the new ceasefire proposal, states that Israel has accepted it, we'll see, calls on Hamas to agree to it, and urges both parties to fully implement its terms without delay and without condition. The resolution also goes into detail about the proposal and spells out that if the negotiations take longer than 6 weeks for the first phase, then the ceasefire will still continue as long as negotiations continue. Thomas Greenfield said that the vote showed Hamas that the international community was united here. She said, quote, united behind a deal that will save lives and help Palestinian civilians in Gaza start to rebuild and heal, united behind a deal that will reunite hostages with their families after 8 months in captivity, she said. So we will see. This seems to be very good news. This is the first time that this has been able to that the UN Security Council has been able to get through something like this. For months, negotiators from the U.S. and Egypt and Qatar have been trying to mediate a ceasefire. Let's hope this pushes them in that direction. The resolution's strong support in the UN's most powerful body puts added pressure on both parties at this point to approve the proposal. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, however, has said that Biden presented only parts of the proposal and insisted that any talk of a permanent ceasefire before dismantling Hamas's military and governing capabilities is a non-starter. Just as I said, he needs this war to go on forever. And in another major story, speaking of political moves to the far right over the weekend, a four-day election has shaken the foundations of the European Union, as AP describes it today, with the far right rocking ruling parties in France and Germany in particular, the bloc's traditional driving forces. While the election results don't necessarily mean an immediate move to the far right for the European Parliament, it will make it more difficult over the next 5 years for them to make decisions after a shakeup that is likely, at the least, to move Parliament to the, well, to at least the far right of the center right, according to analysts today. The biggest immediate fallout was French President Emmanuel Macron's decision to dissolve the French government and call snap national elections after Marine Le Pen's far right National Rally Party humbled Macron's pro-European centrists in the polls. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's Social Democrats also suffered, as the extreme right Alternative for Germany, or AfD, party made massive gains in the elections, despite, or perhaps because of, its leader favorably citing Hitler's SS. Yes, that's what's going on right now in Europe. In Italy, the party of Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, which has neo-fascist roots, they won more than 28% of the national vote for the EU Assembly, which would make it a key player in forming future alliances. Green and pro-business liberal groups across Europe suffered heavy defeats, though mainstream formations apparently held their ground, with the center-right European People's Party remaining still the biggest bloc in the 27-nation EU Assembly. Among the questions now will be if the various far-right parties are able to come together in some sort of coalition, given that many of them actually disagree with each other on various topics of note, from climate change to abortion to migration. The vote, however, is a grim reading for centrist stalwarts such as Macron and Scholz in Germany. That, according to Washington Post columnist Ishan Tharoor, their predicaments echo across the Atlantic, he writes, with President Biden fighting a tough battle against a Trumpist movement that sees itself explicitly in alliance with the anti-immigrant, so-called anti-woke parties of Europe's far right. To be sure, the EU Parliament is not the continent's most important institution. The Parliament is not as powerful as other EU branches, though it helps set the bloc's agenda. Tharoor reports that it cannot directly initiate laws, but it can veto and shape them and is responsible for approving the EU budget, giving it some agenda-setting authority. The Parliament also has the last word on the selection of the European Commission president, arguably the Union's most powerful job. Ursula von der Leyen, the center-right German politician who has held the job for the past 5 years, is expected to seek a second term. The different far-right parties across Europe have a shared position on identity, immigration, and Islam, and it's also where they're increasingly converging with the center-right, notes Hans Kundani at New York University's Remarque Institute. Dutch political scientist Cas Moude observes, quote, the new power center will not so much be the far right, but the far right of von der Leyen's center-right bloc, which will seize on the rightward pressures to push its traditional coalition partners further to the right, particularly on issues such as the environment, gender and sexuality, and, of course, immigration. And I suspect, Desi Doyen, that you're already looking at what's going on here in Europe regarding our Green News report on tomorrow's broadcast.
Yes, we'll definitely be covering that.
I can barely hear you. You got some more volume on that microphone, Wendell? Try again.
How about now?
There we go.
Okay, great.
There
so, yes, yes. There will be more on that in our Green News report tomorrow. And it is a big deal, I mean, because it marks the end of the European Union bloc's greenest parliament ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be maybe no progress there, or not much, over the next 5 years.
Or certainly slowing things down.
Yes, most definitely slowing things down.
Not good. Anyway, more on that on the broadcast on the Green News Report on our show tomorrow. Politico's Nicholas Vinokur writes, quote, nearly a decade ago, the Brexit earthquake in the spring of 2016, which we should all remember well, in which voters in the UK voted to leave the European Union. He says that was an early sign of a global trend toward conservative nationalism. In retrospect, he notes, it seems clear that this movement was part of what powered Donald Trump to a surprise upset over Democrat Hillary Clinton in the U.S. presidential election that same year. Leading policymakers are grappling with the inherent pessimism in the far right's articulation of what it may mean to be European at this point. Quote, there is a disproportionate sense of disappointment in our societies, said Thomas Bagger, the state secretary of the German Foreign Office, to the New York Times. He says, quote, we lost our trust that we had figured out the long arc of history and that it bends toward democracy. He notes Russia lost its idea of the future, and President Vladimir Putin then turned to the past. He notes we are in danger of falling into that same trap at this point. And I want to highlight this point before we move on. We will get to your calls, 818-985-KPFK, regarding Donald Trump. But I want to highlight this point. The gains by the far right in Europe in the European parliamentary elections appear to have as much to do with many progressive voters, particularly in Germany, who stayed home during the four-day election that began last Thursday, went through Sunday. They simply didn't turn out to vote. That, of course, opened the door to the far right to gain, well, much more control over what we will now see in the Eurozone over the next at least 5 years until the next parliamentary elections. So that also seems worth keeping in mind this year as we head towards our own presidential and congressional elections with a convicted felon, presumably at the top of the Republican ticket, one who by then may or may not be sentenced to, if not necessarily yet serving, jail time for 34 felony crimes related to successfully rigging the 2016 election in his favor. Now, a number of polls since Trump's conviction show some small movement away from him. For example, the New York Times resurveyed some of its past respondents and found an infinitesimal move in Biden's direction. But a new YouGov poll last week provided, even a starker sign to what is going on here. The percentage of Republicans who now say that a convicted felon who said in April that a convicted felon should not be president, that number has plummeted from 58% in April to 23% now. So if you ask Republicans back in April, hey, do you think a convicted felon should become president? Well, 58% said no, absolutely not. Now, well, sure. Why not? I got some more numbers of note along those lines, but I would love to hear from you on a number of related questions. Did Trump's felony conviction change your particular position on either who you plan to vote for this November or not? And if not, why not? Also, do you believe Trump will receive jail time when he is sentenced on July 11? If not, why not? Do you think he should receive jail time? If so, how much? Each of those 34 felony charges could give him 4 years in jail. Now, they could allow him to serve them all concurrently at the same time, so he's not in jail for more than 4 years. There's a 20-year maximum for this crime in New York. But how much should he be sentenced to, if any? And if he shouldn't be sentenced to any time in jail, please tell me why not. 818-985-5735. Were you surprised by the jury's verdict coming back just 2 days after defense had rested their case and the unanimous finding on all 34 counts of falsifying business records in his scheme to defraud the American public and to rig an American election? 818-985-5735 is our phone number for those listening in our live listening area. 818-985-KPFK to ring in on any thoughts related to Trump and our own elections this November. Hit option number one to talk to us, join us on air, or option number two to donate to KPFK and Pacifica Radio. Let's take a quick break here. We will come back with hopefully your calls and some related news. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yes, he is guilty. Guilty on 34 counts. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. For the past few months, we've seen story after story, poll after poll, suggesting that many Trump voters, if Trump were convicted of a crime, well, then they would abandon him. It was sure he was indicted 4 times, but he hadn't been convicted. Once he was convicted of a crime, well, that would be a different story. Republican supporters of Trump would rethink everything and they would begin to abandon him. That was something that, as we discussed on the show a number of times, I was always highly dubious about. Well, the polling since Donald Trump's guilty verdict on 34 felony counts related to his successful effort to rig the 2016 presidential election in his favor by paying hush money to a porn star and then falsifying documents to hide that payoff during his first year in office. Polls since that verdict came down would seem to support my dubiosity. But as my as it's my first chance to open the phones to listeners since his conviction, I would love to hear from you about it before I get to some of these numbers. Love to hear from you. 818-985-5735. If you are in our live Southern California listening area, or if you're listening to the live stream via kpfk.org, love to hear from you. 818-985-KPFK. Your thoughts on Donald Trump, his conviction, what it means, what it doesn't mean, how long, if any, you would like to see him sentenced to in jail at his sentencing coming up next month, July 11, 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Larry. Larry's always good to kick us off. Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Welcome back to the broadcast, I should say.
Thank you so much, Brad. Obviously, we face a fascist insurgency, and we really have to work harder between now and November to defeat this group of Nazis. And I'm just wondering, Brad, if Joe Biden were to, say, tap Taylor Swift and tap into her large number of supporters, do you think that might possibly push us over the line and get Joe Biden elected? And if you don't mind, I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, Larry, don't hang up yet. Oh, he's so quick to get off the air. I had some follow-up questions for him. But, of course, sure, Taylor Swift on board with Joe Biden would help. She has a huge audience, a huge following. It drives Donald Trump crazy because she draws bigger crowds than he does by far. And I suspect she will be on board with Joe Biden before all is said and done. Whether that makes the difference, whether that puts us over the top, who knows? I don't know. There's no way to know how close all of this is. There's no way to know until, you know, voters head into the voting booth. All of these polls and the polling and the pundits out there trying to decide who... you know, trying to tell us who is ahead, who isn't. Good luck. Good luck. The best that the polls can do is give us a snapshot of what people are feeling right now if they are good polls. And the question of whether they are good polls depends on, you know, the models that the pollsters use, which is all based on their best guess as far as who's going to show up to vote in November, who, you know, Republicans, Democrats, independents. It's really a guessing game. And I would take nothing for granted. Nothing. Even though recent polls have now shown Joe Biden since the conviction actually beginning to move ahead of Donald Trump. Just barely, however, and that's only if you believe those polls. Again, I'll get back to some of the details of those polls if need be in a moment, but I would rather talk to you about them. Can I go to number one here? Let me go to Abraham in Irvine, California. Hey, Abraham, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm okay.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. Thanks
Sorry,
for being
here. I'm driving.
Had.
I hope I'm clear. Just my two cents on your question on whether the conviction would affect the polls. I think it does, and I see that the former VP, Mike Pence, took a stand from that. I guess that was one of the reasons why he changed his mind about Trump and then also Paul Ryan. So I see it's changed there.
Because Mike Pence has said he won't support Donald Trump, you see change there? Is that what you're saying?
I believe that was one of the reasons. I mean, that came within, it was a timely...
I think Pence had said he was not going to support Trump before the convictions came in. And you can put that side by side with Nikki Haley, who said, oh, yeah, I'm going to support Donald Trump. I know I spent the entire primary season talking about him not being fit for office, but I'm going to vote for him after all. That was Nikki Haley. So when Mike Pence is outdoing you, well, you should be asking yourself some questions. But yeah. All right. Thanks, Abraham. Appreciate the call. 818-985. Am I doing that right? 818-985-KPFK. Did we have? Oh, we lost. Okay. We'll get back to him. 818-985-5735. According to Ipsos, in a poll of more than 2,500 eligible voters taken the Thursday night and Friday night immediately following the announcement of the guilty verdict in Trump's criminal trial. So this is just over a week ago. 54% of registered voters said they would not vote for Donald Trump if he is convicted of a crime. But that is a 6-point drop from April of this year, ahead of the start of the trial, when 60% said they would not vote for him if he was convicted of a crime. That drop, according to Ipsos, was driven entirely by Republicans. So if you drill down in the numbers here, back in April, 24% of Republicans said they would not vote for Donald Trump if he were convicted of a felony crime by a jury. Now, that is one quarter of Republicans who were willing to say they would not vote for Donald Trump if he was convicted of a felony crime. That ain't much, frankly. But that number, which was 24% back in April, fell to just 14% who were willing to say, 14% of Republicans who were willing to say they would not vote for him now, after he was found guilty. Which sort of proves my point there that, you know, those who claimed that they were okay with him, you know, being indicted, that's one thing, innocent until proven guilty. But a conviction, well, that would just be a bridge too far. They would review the notion of supporting Donald Trump. But apparently, many of those Trump supporters, what do you know? They turn out to be just fine voting for a convicted criminal for president of the United States. Now that he has actually been convicted. Now, oh, sure, nothing wrong with having a convict as our president. Are you okay with that? Because I know some of our listeners are. If you are okay with that, I would love to know why. Why you are okay with a convicted felon serving as president. And by the way, would you have been okay if the convicted felon, let's say, was Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or Joe Biden? 818-985-5735. I've got open phone lines for you. 818-985-KPFK. The Reuters Ipsos survey found only about 1 in 10 Republicans saying that the verdict makes them at least somewhat less likely to vote for Trump. And that's if you believe them. 1 in 10. Now, YouGov, in a more recent survey, this was the middle of last week, found similar, finding that Republicans' positions on felony, crime in general, and the presidency has shifted since the verdict. What do you know? In a way that puts the verdict in a more favorable light and keeps Trump's candidacy viable. For example, fewer Republicans think it should be illegal to pay hush money for the purposes of influencing an election than did 1 year ago. By the way, it is not illegal to pay hush money. It's illegal to then not report it as a campaign expense. But while Republicans used to have a problem with that, now they're thinking, oh, what's wrong with paying hush money? And more also now say that felons should be allowed to become president than did just a few months ago when the respondents were asked the very same question. Now, of course, felons are allowed to become president. Felon, even if he is sentenced to jail, he is allowed to run for and win the presidency. Republicans used to be against that. Now, much less so. Why? I know we got Republicans out there listening. I know because they call in or they send me, as soon as we get off the air, they send me all kinds of email to bradcast@bradblog.com. But when I invite them on air, where are they? I'll be nice. 818-985-KPFK. Post-conviction Trump defectors have not materialized to the extent that they claimed they would before the verdict. Are you surprised? For example, fewer Republicans now choose being a criminal as among the three traits that they find least desirable in a president, compared to back in February when YouGov last asked, the drop is 15 points to 19 points from 34 previously. Self-identified independents are also less likely to say this than they were just a few months ago. They saw a drop of 14 points to 38% from 52%. Many Republicans have also changed their minds on whether felons should be allowed as president. In April, just 17% of Republicans told YouGov that convicted felons should be allowed to be president. The share of Republicans holding this belief rose to 58% in their survey just after the verdict was announced, after Trump became a convicted felon. So back in April, just 17%. of Republicans think a felon should be allowed to be president. Now 58% believe that. That marks a 41-point increase over 2 months. 818-985-KPFK. Oh, good. We've got someone who's willing to defend Donald Trump here. Good. Is that John? John, is that the John we've spoken with previously on the program, John?
Oh, sure, yeah. You know, I called in earlier, and your screener cut me off because I was a Trump supporter. And then I said, well, he's asking for Trump supporters. Why did you cut me off?
No, well, I will tell you.
You might have a little better communication
John, I will tell you why, and let's try to have a conversation here instead of talking over each other. But she thought that you cursed. And that's why.
I did not curse.
She misheard you. We're sorry about that. And I'm glad you called back because I'm delighted to have you here. So did you we know you supported Donald Trump prior to his conviction while he was indicted. Now he's been indicted on 34 counts. Do you still support Donald Trump?
Absolutely. Al Capone was charged with one count. And so Donald Trump, 34 counts. I'll tell you, this is a Soviet show trial. This is absolutely a Soviet show trial.
Really?
I'll tell you the alternative for anybody that's liberal.
No, hang on. Let's have a conversation. John, let's have a conversation. What makes it a Soviet show trial? Do they allow all of the privileges that Donald Trump had in this trial in the Soviet Union? Sure.
All right, you're going to try him in probably the most Democrat district there is in the country, if not, right there up with all of them.
All right, let me respond. Let me respond. Hang on, John. John.
Let me give you my reason.
No, we're going to go one at a time, okay? So you don't flood the zone with nonsense. So let's start with, they try him in a very Democratic location of the country because, A, that's where he committed the crime, and B, it's Donald Trump's hometown. He was tried in his home state. You're calling that an outrage that Donald Trump was tried in his own home city? Really? Okay. What's your next point?
Venues are changed very often to make sure that there is a fair and balanced jury who will not go home over the Memorial weekend and get blasted by their buddies like this judge arranged.
Okay, he arranged that. Okay, if you say so.
Well, sure he did. Sure.
How did he arrange that?
After the arguments were closed and he gave instructions, he said, I'll see you in a week.
Right. Do you know why he had to say that, by the way?
No, what you do is you sequester the jury and have them without influence because they are not to talk to anyone about the trial.
Do you know?
What do you think they did over the Memorial weekend?
John, you don't have to yell, dude. You're on the air. Okay. Relax,
Let's look at Mershon.
No, hang on. I'm going to respond to what you said. That's how conversations work.
Okay.
So do you know why there was like almost a week before they came back for closing arguments and the verdict? It's because Donald Trump wanted to take that Friday off for his son's high school graduation. Otherwise, they could have wrapped it up before the holiday weekend.
Okay, I disagree with that 100%.
Okay.
They wanted to
check
let
the timing.
Let the people go home
check
and get
timing.
Blasted by their neighbors. Let's go to the next one.
Okay.
So the judge should have disqualified himself because he violated the canon of judicial ethics by donating to a political party. That is, and he got slapped on the wrist for that.
Yeah. How much did he donate, by the way?
It doesn't matter. The lower the amount, the more significant it is because he's saying,
really?
I am a Democrat.
You don't. Okay.
Judges
we
in
will
New
talk.
York are not allowed to
Good.
Donate to campaigns.
We will talk about that in a second. And that's ground for appeals if what you say is true. But I just want to make clear how much did he donate and when did he do it?
It doesn't matter. He's declaring that he's a Democrat and he did it recently.
Just answer the question. Because
you know the answer.
Okay, John. If you're going to start screaming,
the daughter is a bundler of millions of dollars.
Okay, listen. if you're going to start yelling and screaming over me, I'm going
to
cut you off. I was willing to have this conversation with you. I know, but you know that the answer is $35 about 10 years ago. Right. And you wouldn't say that because you're so dishonest. But as far as giving money to jurists, which is just outrageous, even though it's $35 10 years ago, I'm sure that you will join me at least. We can find common. Hang on. I'm talking, John. I swear I'm going to hang up on you unless you let me talk, and I'll let you talk. So we can join forces when it comes to the Supreme Court that Alito and Thomas should both be removed for the millions of dollars in gifts and so forth that they've—
show. I'm talking about this issue, not that issue.
No, I'm testing you. I'm testing you if you actually mean it. So if it's outrageous for a judge to, you know, be in concert to receive money with a political party, then you call for Thomas to step down.
Is there a law? I do not know, but is there a law forbidding Supreme Court justices to donate to a campaign?
Is there a law forbidding them to do so?
I
don't believe. No, I don't believe so. And if there is in New York, then if there is in New York, that's why we have the appeals process. And I'm not worried about it. I'm sure that Judge Mershon will be held to account if he actually violated the law, as you say. Okay, what else you got?
Well, his daughter is a multi-million dollar, and it's not Democratic, so you got to say Democrat, because Democratic and Democrat are two different words that have two different meanings. She is a bundler for the Democrat Party. His immediate
All right, John, you had access. All right, turn him down. You had access to the airwaves, to the largest transmitter west of the Mississippi, and I was going to let you talk. But when you're going to use that microphone for propaganda to call it the Democrat Party, it is called the Democratic Party. That's the official name. You know that, and yet you want to use these airwaves for propaganda. I ain't going to do it. Sorry, buddy. I would have loved to have had this conversation. I gave you a whole bunch of tries. Oh, you hung up on yourself? Okay. He hung up on himself. Thank you for showing your way yourself out the door. 818-985-KPFK. I tried. We know what we're going to get with John. And I tried. I tried to calm him down. I guess I calmed him down so much that he hung up on himself. 818-985-KPFK. Let's go to Chris in Brea. Hey, Chris. Welcome to the broadcast, sir. I think, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going okay. Are you a member of the Democrat Party? Don't even get me started. All right, go ahead. No, it doesn't matter. Leave that. Chris, what's on your mind, sir?
So your question was, are there Republicans out there that still support ex-President Trump after, you know, these 34 convictions?
Well, we know that there are those people. I'm, so the question is, why are there those people? Are you one of those people?
I am.
Okay.
And the reason being, you know, I guess between the two, maybe if there was someone else running that was better than Trump, you know, it might be we might be having a different conversation. But right now it's basically Biden versus Trump. And in my eyes, and you should also... This should bring some light to the Democrats, is there's a lot of people that will still vote for Trump, and I think it's because of the state the nation is in.
Mm-hmm.
If people are willing to vote for a convicted felon for whatever reason, whatever he was convicted of, over a sitting president, there has to be a darn good reason. And, you know, you look at immigration.
Well, what's your reason?
You look at
I'm asking about your reason. Your reasons for doing
my reason is the immigration policies. Is failed immigration policies.
What don't you like about the immigration? Inflation. What don't you like about the immigration policies?
I don't like that the borders are wide open and that we have hundreds of thousands of immigrants coming over the border that aren't being vetted.
Where did you get the idea that there were hundreds of thousands of immigrants coming over the border that weren't being vetted, that it was wide open? How do you get that idea? Where did you hear that from? Because that's completely not true, Chris.
Well, if you watch TV and you can see the amount of people that are coming over, and if you go on the Social Security websites, it shows the amount of undocumented immigrants and undocumented people in the U.S. that are trying to register to vote.
No.
Every state.
Okay, Chris. So I don't know what channel you're watching on TV. But you are being wildly misinformed. The Social Security, you mentioned the Social Security website and undocumented immigrants signing up to vote. Undocumented immigrants are not allowed to vote under federal law. And even if they were, it would not be listed at the Social Security site because that has nothing to do with voting. So you wouldn't see that there. So what I'm concerned about is,
they're trying to register to vote.
Who?
Whether or not they can vote.
Why would they do
another
that?
Thing, but
it's against the law. So why would they do that?
So the Social Security Administration Office, they keep track of everybody that tries to vote. And they categorize it where they're, the name and Social Security number that they try to use, or if the Social Security number is actually current, or if that Social Security is linked to somebody who's deceased.
So this is complete I really appreciate your calling and being decent about having this conversation, unlike our previous caller, John. But here's the thing. The information that you are repeating, I believe that you believe it, but it is entirely and completely wrong. There is not people trying to Social Security doesn't track any of that stuff. There is a law that whenever you do anything with the government, you are to be given the option to sign up to vote. But the fact of the matter is, undocumented immigrants are not allowed to vote. And if they vote, it's a crime.
They're trying to register to vote.
They are not.
See, if they cannot,
they are not.
Well,
I've been covering this now for 20 years now. I've been covering election integrity and issues like this. They simply are not trying to vote. It will get them thrown out of the country. If they've made a claim to try to stay in the country, the last thing they want to do is violate the law, because that will immediately end their asylum case. They will immediately be thrown out. There are some cases where some undocumented immigrants were handed a voter registration form, did not know what it was, were handed it by the officials. They filled it out. They gave it back. But they don't go and vote because that would be illegal as well. It's just bad information that you're getting, Chris. And again, I believe that you believe it, unlike John, who has given us a bunch of nonsense. I believe you're actually repeating information that you have been disinformed about.
It's public knowledge. You can actually go on the Social Security Social Security Administration page and see that. That's where I got it. It was from the Social Security. Unless the Social Security Administration is putting out false information, could be a possibility.
No, I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting my email address, Chris, is bradcast@bradblog.com. Please do me a favor after we get off the air and send me the link to that page at the Social Security site that you're talking about. I'd love to see it, and we can follow up and talk about it on tomorrow's show or later this week.
But that's just one of the many. Yeah. That's just one of the. Okay. But what about inflation they stopped drilling oil and our gas prices are high and our stockpile was depleted.
All right, hang on. Let me reply. Let me reply to that as well. Okay. First, inflation is lower in the U.S. than it is in any other comparable country on the globe following the pandemic.
Doesn't mean it's okay.
No.
It doesn't mean it's
no,
okay.
Nobody likes it, but it's coming down. It's almost down to what it.
I'm saying
it's coming
it's
down
a,
to what it.
It's a fact that it's too high.
Sure, it's 4%, and they prefer that it be 2% or thereabouts. That said, let's talk about. Sounds like you listen to a lot of Fox News because.
No, I don't.
Okay, well,
I don't actually.
You said you watch something on TV, and if anybody on TV,
I've just seen the videos of reports down at the border where there's. You've seen them. What about
moving forward because I'm coming up to
the guys on the horses that were whipping the immigrants coming over the border. I mean, those were We're
coming up to the top of the hour, Chris, so I just don't want to let some of that misinformation stand. Right now, the U.S. is the world's leader in oil and gas production. We are at an all-time high of oil and gas production. The notion that you just noted, that we've stopped drilling for oil, we stopped drilling for gas, whatever, is the opposite of the truth. And I'm worried about where you are getting your information, that it is so the opposite of what reality actually is.
But I said he did stop the pipeline. He did put more regulations on the oil and gas fields, you know, on the fracking.
And yet, there is still more oil and gas production than there ever has been in U.S. history. And we are the world's leading producer of oil and gas. I mean, there's more oil and gas, and I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying it's a fact. I don't like the idea that there's more oil and gas, but the fact is there's more oil and gas being produced under Joe Biden than there was under Donald Trump. Period.
Then why is it so high? Then why are we taxing it so much?
Why are we taxing it so much?
Yeah, at the pump. Then why is the pump price higher under Joe Biden than it was Donald Trump?
Because the global oil market determines the price. Joe Biden does not determine the price. He has, however, by the way, made tens of billions of dollars by being the world's best oil trader by releasing the National Petroleum Reserve when gas was at an all-time high and buying it back when it was at an all-time low. We've just made hundreds of billions of dollars thanks to his trading there. Chris, I really enjoyed talking to you.
Yeah, and but you can have regimes like Venezuela where they produce their own oil and they give it to the
we got
to
pick this up another day. I'm sorry, Chris.
For, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Chris, I'm sorry. Please call back in the future. I'd love to talk to you some more. We got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to our board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of our program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.